right, we are back. We're back in action. Between the Tackles, episode 46. I am your host, Hogan, here with my good buddy, Manish. Unfortunately, Burge is out of town. He's skipping the joint. He's probably out celebrating somewhere because you guys kicked my butts in the pick'em this week. I'm not going to be as overly confident and cocky like I was last time, unfortunately, for all our fans out there. I know that's what you want to tune in to hear me just gloat and say, I'm the best. But we have some exciting, awesome football stuff to get to today. We'll get to the picks later, but let's kick this off, Manish. Did you happen to catch the Patriots stinking all over the West Coast this past weekend? Because I certainly did, and I didn't want to watch it, but I had to watch it.
I did. And I actually thought the Patriots would have a chance to cover. It was a double-digit spread, and when you're down 20-0 at halftime, even a backdoor cover looks tough. Obviously, they didn't come close to covering, so kind of the outcome that I think most of us expected, unless you're a complete Patriot homer. But what's fascinating to me is, I know we're going to talk about briefly like how the game unfolded, but just kind of what's next, what the next steps are, because a lot has happened since that game for New England.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the big thing was I anticipated them getting their butts kicked. Actually, my final score prediction for that game was 34-13. I was pretty dang close. Oh. It was 30-13. So I get a little pat on the back for myself there. But no, unfortunately, yeah, like you talked about, there was a lot of different aspects of that game that just went horribly wrong for the Patriots. I mean, everybody on the planet knows at this point they cannot pass the ball, and that reared its ugly head in that game where they abandoned the run almost immediately. Ramondre Stevenson fumbled the ball again, their best offensive player, and now there's even talk of him getting benched because of all the fumbles, which, hey, if you're Belichick, you're not seeing the field for at least a few games. That's what happened to him his rookie year. But then the injuries are just the biggest thing, with David Andrews going down and the news breaking today that he's going to be out for the remainder of the year, along with Kyle Duggar having a bad ankle sprain. It's just the captains are falling apart, and it's crazy to me that the Patriots are still having a team to be put on the field at this point. So, Manish, off the top of your head, can you think of any other teams that have dealt with the injury bug as badly as the Patriots seem to be getting destroyed by it right now? Because, man, oh, man, I can't think of a time where I've just – they're the walking dead at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if you look around the league, Hogan, this year, look at the Kansas City Chiefs. They've lost Isaiah Pacheco for at least another month and a half. Rashee Rice, who knows if he's out for the season, but he's certainly not going to come back anytime soon. So it's a way of life in the NFL. You stay in the division. I don't have to tell Patriot fans about what the Jets endured last year with Aaron Rodgers leaving after a handful of plays. So, it does come. Sometimes you can escape a season unscathed, and you've got your key pieces in place for the duration. But more times than not, you're going to have to adjust. And that's really what this league is about. It's about adjusting when the guys that you thought you could count on aren't there because they're injured. That's why these preseason predictions and look ahead to the schedule when you're doing the win-loss game in schedules is a very dangerous game and unpredictable game, because injuries change everything so quickly. And yeah, you're right, the Patriots are going through some of that right now. I do think, if you're looking at it from New England's perspective, you kind of knew, if you were honest with yourself, that this was going to be a rebuilding year, and the playoffs were not really a part of the equation, barring some kind of miracle. So yeah, it hurts. I think the Andrews injury is particularly damaging because there is a ripple effect when you're discussing when should you bring in Drake May and make that handoff from Brissett to May. Will losing your center in a complicated scheme, and that's kind of what the Patriots play with, the West Coast scheme, losing a center when you're trying to integrate a young quarterback is a bigger deal than you might think. I mean, young quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks, rely heavily on centers for pre-snap recognition. I just know over the last decade plus, looking at some of the younger quarterbacks that the Jets had, I think back to Mark Sanchez when that team had a lot of success in his first two seasons. He relied heavily on Nick Mangold for pre-snap protections and adjusting things. They're really just another set of eyes and another brain for a young quarterback to rely on in real time. So not having Andrews there certainly alters the equation for Drake May. I don't think the big picture should change too much, but when he actually does get an opportunity to play, which he will, not having such a smart player at the center position, a veteran, will make things a little bit more challenging for him.
Yeah, I go back to obviously like a quarterback like Peyton Manning had a Jeff Saturday for as long as he did. That just really helped integrate him into the league, like you were talking about with that. So I guess you got to get out of my brain, because obviously I was thinking, I was like, this is a fantastic way to segue into our next topic with the Patriots before we get off the dumpster fire, is the Drake May situation. So you touched on it a little bit there, where like you said, it's going to make it interesting with David Andrews now being out, where it's more difficult to transition from where they're at right now to hopefully bringing in May to get some kind of experience in his rookie year, whether that's in the later part of the season or wherever they had this plan where they were going to transition to him. Because if you listen to what Mayo's saying right now, they are just dead set on Jacoby Brissett, which for me, as the biased homer that I am more than okay with it, because I do not want to see May out there, especially behind this offensive line. Pre-David Andrews injury, did not want him out there. Post-David Andrews, I don't want to see him out there at all. But I guess the question becomes, with the losses racking up the way that they are and the way that the passing attack is going, do the Patriots have a choice whether they can stick with Brissett going forward, or do they are their hands going to be like tied where they have to go to May?
Well, I think the only time that they would technically have to go to May is if Brissett were injured. There's always an option. There's a lot of different ways, and I think we touched on some of those ways last week. But just look at the raw numbers. And there's one stat that I really want to point out. On the surface, Brissett's been sacked 15 times. He's been hit 40 times. That's unofficial, but I think there's various sites that have 40 quarterback hits tagged to the Patriots. 40 in 4 games. So you do the math. That's not good. What I found interesting is that when you look at the sack percentage, the percentage of times your quarterback gets sacked when he drops back, the Patriots have the highest percentage, so they're the worst at that. It's about 13-14%. The team that has the lowest sack percentage is not really a team that you would think of. It's actually Denver. And, Bo Nix is not a terrific quarterback yet by any stretch of the imagination, but he is mobile. So I think you can mitigate some of the issues that the offensive line has shown to this point by having a more mobile player behind center. And obviously Drake May is more mobile than Jacoby Brissett. So while I think that, Andrews going down does alter things a little bit for the reasons that I outlined a minute ago for May, I don't really think it should preclude the overall plan about getting May in, because, and I think I touched on this last week, if you wait for the Patriots offensive line to gel or become markedly better, you might be waiting all season. That might not happen. And because the Patriots bye week is so late, it's week 14, you've only got 4 games after the bye. So if you were to say, hey, we're going to make that quarterback change and have May get his feet wet for the last month of the season, they're playing, I think they play the Chargers, Rams. They play the Bills actually twice in those final 4 games. I think that's too late, because you need, if you're a Patriots fan, if you're the Patriots organization, you need May to go through growing pains. And I don't think 4 games is nearly enough, because the entire plan is for him to get these hiccups out of the way his rookie season, because in effect, you're really not challenging for a playoff spot. And you want him to be best positioned to hit the ground running in year 2. The best way that I see for any young quarterback to do that is to get experience. And that's why you're seeing Bo Nix play from the jump. That's why you're seeing Jaden Daniels, who's obviously proven to be somebody who could be a special player, and Caleb Williams, even though he's going through his growing pains. You need a fairly large sample size within the course of the season. I don't think 1/4 of the season is nearly enough. I think you can get away with having May play for the second half of the season, week 9. I think they play Tennessee. Tough defense, but they play Tennessee and Chicago back-to-back weeks. 2 good defenses, but still, you get an 8-game sample size, 9-game sample size for Drake May. I think that can work. Personally, I think you could start him this week, which you're not going to do. But if you started him in the next week or two, you'd get him 10, 11 games of starting experience. That, to me, makes perfect sense. I just don't think that you should, as a fan, be overly concerned that because the offensive line is so bad, you're going to do irreparable damage to Drake May, even though it's happened. We talked about this last week with David Carr and other quarterbacks. The key, because he is more mobile, I think you can, relieve some of the pressure from the offensive line, so it can actually help the offensive line as well. Will that, result in more wins? Who knows? But the key is for this young player at this pivotal position to get as much experience as possible. And I think at the very least, he should play half the season.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see when he actually gets the go-ahead to be the starter going forward. And a big thing, too, is that I'm reading a lot of reports that a lot of the guys that are started the year on the PUP list are starting to come off of that as well. So Kendrick Bourne could certainly be a spark that the Patriots receiving core needs to get going, and whether he connects with Brissett will be interesting to see, or if they bring in May and they have some kind of connection. As a fan for the Patriots, I'd love to see it. Whether it'll actually happen or not, I don't know. Still vying for that high draft pick, so don't. I'm still counting my losses. It's okay. But let's move on to a little bit of action that came from this past weekend. And there's a name you brought up a couple times talking about Drake May there, and that's Bo Nix. I quickly want to touch on what happened in that Denver and New York game. That sloppy, rainy game where it was just like, did Bo Nix have -7 passing yards at halftime and they still found a way to win that game?
Yeah, he did. And he only finished the game with 60 passing yards and they won the game. So it was an unusual game. The weather was a factor. I think it impacted the home team more than it did the Broncos. I watched much of that game. And what I will say about Nix, even though overall he didn't play a particularly good game, he had some pivotal passes and key moments to Cortland Sutton. He obviously found Sutton the wide open for a touchdown, and that proved to be the game winner. It was an unusual game also because there were so many false starts on the Jets end, and there was a mini controversy about Aaron Rodgers' cadence after the game. Robert Saleh was talking about how Rodgers' cadence, maybe the guys on the team weren't ready for it. And I give Aaron Rodgers, frankly, a lot of credit because he was asked about that in the post game as well. And he said, well, maybe the players should take some accountability because this is something that they practice every day. And Rodgers, attributed all the pre-snap penalties to an outlier game. They hadn't been doing that in the previous three games. So you tend to think that that's probably true. But I think, the New York media at least tried to get a little bit more into what the Aaron Rodgers' relationship with Robert Saleh was, because Rodgers, unwittingly or not, kind of criticized Saleh after Saleh kind of criticized Aaron Rodgers. And, midweek, both of those guys seemed to squash any kind of issue. I don't really think it's that big of a deal, to be perfectly honest, but the cadence thing needs to be cleaned up if you're one of the Jets' offensive players, because Aaron Rodgers has made a career of getting free plays because the defense jumps off sides because his cadence is so impeccable. It's one of his tools. It's one of his strengths. It's really a weapon that he's used throughout his career. So inexcusable loss, frankly. You cannot give up 60 yards passing and still lose the football game. I think a lot of people had a hand in that, Aaron Rodgers being one of them. He wasn't particularly good. The offensive line, in terms of pass protection, wasn't particularly good. And now Aaron Rodgers is dealing with a swollen knee. He's 40 years old, a couple months away from being 41. It's only week 4, and his knee's swollen up. He's obviously, I think, going to play in London against Minnesota this weekend. But there's a cumulative toll on your body for any quarterback, especially a 40-year-old who's coming off a major surgery.
I mean, I'm only 35, and I feel my knees swelling up every time I got to get out of bed. So I know what you're talking about. It's not anything fun. But you brought up the fact that the Jets got to go to London and they got to play Minnesota this weekend. That's a game that I want to talk with you about really quickly, because first and foremost, this was my only win for my pick'ems this week, which is why I was not happy about. But I digress on that. The Vikings and Packers played a hell of a game at Lambeau Field this weekend, where the Vikings got off to a tremendous 28-0 start. And I'm sitting there all smiles being like, oh, this pick was an easy one. I had it coming. I knew it. And then the Green Bay, just that fourth quarter, they did everything they could to come back. Jordan Love looked pretty decent coming off of his injury. Had a couple of boneheaded picks there, three of them, I think. But Sam Darnold just keeps it rocking and rolling. And there's early talk that he could be the MVP this season. I mean, are we crazy, or is he in the MVP chat right now?
Well, look, if the season ended today, which it doesn't, otherwise it'd be a 4-game season, and that would be terrible. But at the first quarter poll of the season, he would get my vote for MVP. They're one of the two undefeated teams in the NFL. The guy's playing lights out. Their defense is actually very underrated, even though they kind of showed a lot of cracks in the armor in the second half against Green Bay. But offensively, Sam Darnold is almost everything that the Jets had hoped when they took him with a top-5 pick those few years ago. I mean, he's a pedigree player, so it's inside of him, right? It's just about getting in the right situation. I think being with Kevin O'Connell, having a dynamic guy like Justin Jefferson to throw to, and remarkably having the corpse of Aaron Jones. I thought he was done, but he's clearly playing really well. Having those pieces around him with a really good defense out again outside of the second half last week, that's really helped Sam Darnold bring out the skill set that I think a lot of people around the league, talent evaluators around the league, thought he had, you know, coming out of USC. So yeah, it's a great story. It's a Sam Darnold revenge game in London. I think that's one of the more intriguing games of the weekend slate. It's going to be one of the games that I'm going to make a pick on. But yeah, at this point, Sam Darnold for MVP, why not?
Ooh, all right. I like it. And I like the little teaser for your pick there. I very much like that. So one game that I really want to talk about is the Steelers and Colts game. So this game fascinated me because the Steelers were 3-0. They looked like their defense was just on fire, where they weren't going to, you know, let up points to anybody. Anthony Richardson goes down early in this game. Very, very questionable sequence. I don't know if you caught that, Manish, where he came out, Flacco came in for a play, Richardson came back in. They ran a quarterback like draw power something, and it was just like he had just come out because of his like oblique or something. He was holding like his rib cage, where he was clearly hurt. And then the first play you run when he comes back in is a quarterback run. I don't know what the hell that was about, but either way, Joe Flacco, you talk about the corpse of somebody, the corpse of Joe Flacco comes in and puts it to the Steelers, where the Steelers, they had a hell of a comeback in this one. They scored 14 points in the fourth quarter, but it wasn't enough, where the Colts hung on for the 27-24 victory. Did this victory for the Colts tell you more about Indianapolis as a team, or did it tell you more about the Pittsburgh Steelers?
That's a great question. I think it told us how good the Colts offense is when they have a competent passer, to be perfectly honest. No disrespect to Anthony Richardson, because he's an incredible talent. I think he even saw it in week one when he was...
I think there's a little disrespect there. I caught that. There's a little disrespect there, Manish. Don't lie to me.
As a pocket passer, I think it's evident that he is not the pocket passer at this stage of his career that Joe Flacco, even in the twilight of his career, is. That's pretty obvious. Michael Pittman played well last year with Gardner Minshew at quarterback. He was virtually invisible with Anthony Richardson at quarterback, and then he sprang to life with Joe Flacco at quarterback. Josh Downs played really well with Flacco there. I feel like we've seen this movie before, except it was in Cleveland last year, where Joe Flacco just brought out the best in Joku, Cooper, all of these weapons that lay dormant when the starting quarterback, or in Cleveland's case, the backup quarterback even, wasn't as good as Flacco was in the pocket. So I think, you know, if you're a Colts fan, it's, you know, it's a blessing and a curse, because you see what this offense could be if you've got a quality passer behind center. Now, obviously, what Flacco doesn't bring is that running dimension that Anthony Richardson has. And Richardson actually has a cannon of an arm. You saw that in week one against the Texans, where he's throwing the ball like 65 yards in the air or something ridiculous. But just in terms of reading defenses and picking apart defenses, clearly Flacco is superior, even at this age, than Anthony Richardson is. You know, the Flacco story is remarkable. We'll see. It was only one game, but he really carved up a good Pittsburgh Steelers defense. I do think they're a good defense. You know, how maybe not as good as they were in the first couple weeks, but clearly one of the top, you know, handful of defenses. They'll get a good test on Sunday night when they host Dallas. But I'll be interested to see how the Colts play at the Anthony Richardson situation, because he's dealing with a hip injury. Don't know how significant it is. We'll know later in the week whether he's going to play. And if he does play, well, what does that do for their offense? Shane Steichen is a really good offensive coordinator and head coach, offensive play caller, I should say. That one call after Richardson notwithstanding, because I'm with you, I thought that was really peculiar. A guy's injured, comes back, and you call up a designed run, and then he, you know, basically aggravates it, or, you know, gets to a point where he can't play anymore. So that was odd, to say the least. But I'd be curious to see how they handle the Richardson situation. If he's, you know, completely healthy, obviously he's going to play, but if there is any kind of residual doubt, I'm curious to find out if Shane Steichen is curious to see how Joe Flacco could do if he starts with him.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, this was just a very interesting storyline all around between Richardson getting hurt, Pittsburgh. I mean, Justin Fields threw for over 300 yards in that game, which I looked at his numbers and I'm sitting there going, if he does that in a Chicago uniform, that's a career day for him. He played out of his mind, and I think he's actually starting to mesh really well. It's going to be curious to see if Russell Wilson ever does get healthy, what that situation is going to be like in Pittsburgh. But I don't think it's going to happen. But let's change from one team with, like I said, the corpse of Joe Flacco, the ancient Joe Flacco. Let's go to one of the youngest quarterbacks in the league right now that is tearing it up. You know who I'm talking about, Jaden Daniels for the Washington Commanders. Holy, can you think of a time where a rookie has taken the league by storm the way that Jaden Daniels seems to be doing right now? Anywhere you look, the completion percentage is just off the charts. Obviously, he smoked, what was it, Tom Brady's record back in 2007, 80% completion over that or whatever. And they obviously did what they did to the Bengals last week, which is very impressive on Monday Night Football. The Cardinals, I thought, were kind of a frisky team. That's why, again, another loss for me because I picked them to beat the Commanders. But boy, oh boy, 42 points at Arizona. That's something to go home and write about.
Yeah, that was a surprise. You know, I didn't pick that as part of my picks, but I was with you. I thought the Cardinals were going to win the game. Certainly didn't think they were going to get blown out at home. Yeah, Jaden Daniels is a surprise to me. You knew that he was an athlete and he could run. But as a passer, he's far more along than I anticipated. Maybe that's just me being naive, but I didn't think that he would be this good. Now, you know, can he keep it up? I mean, I think he's getting better. I don't know what his ceiling is as a rookie. You know, Washington's no stranger to having a rookie quarterback have a really good year. You know, when Robert Griffin III was a rookie, he had an exceptional year. I mean, it's not to this level, but it was still a really good season. I think he finished the season with 20 touchdowns, 5 picks. So, you know, he took good care of the ball. What's fascinating to me, and we talked about this a bit earlier with Davante Adams. Or did we talk about that off the air? I can't remember.
We haven't talked about him yet. We're going to get to him.
All right. Well, when we get to the Davante Adams portion of the podcast, we can talk about potential destinations. And to me, Washington is a fascinating place. I mean, I know that, you know, we'll get into it a little bit more later, but if Jaden Daniels could have that one dynamic weapon. I know he's got Terry McLaurin, who's a really good player, but if he could have another piece to the puzzle, I think Washington can make some serious noise because the NFC East is weak. Eagles don't have a defense. Cowboys have been, you know, up and down. The Giants, you know, they're not making the playoffs this year. So that's a wide open division. You know, whether or not they do make a trade for another player like a Davante Adams, I think the Commanders will be in the mix, but if they're serious about going for the jugular and winning this division with the rookie quarterback, I think making a deal for Davante Adams would be pretty smart, to be honest.
All right, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're going to talk about Davante Adams, I promise you. But really quickly, I want to throw it back to you, and you wanted to talk about the Bills getting their doors blown off by the Baltimore Ravens. And our good buddy Burge, who unfortunately is not here, can't relish the fact that his Bills got annihilated on Sunday Night Football. Burgess, we're thinking about you. We love you, buddy. Well, love's a little strong. I mean, you love to hate the Bills. That's what we're talking about here. Manish, tell me what happened to the Bills.
They just got run over. They got beat up. This is like the old school Baltimore Ravens. And I think if you're John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta, when you signed Derrick Henry in the offseason, you probably thought, look, this is not the player, you know, that ran for 2,000 yards in Tennessee, but we're going to get a quality player who can help us out situationally. You know, we'll mix in a Justice Hill. They've got another young running back who's coming off ACL who won't be ready until the second half of the season. But Henry can be an important piece to the puzzle. I don't think they imagined an old Derrick Henry, you know, running for 80-some-odd yards on the first play for a touchdown, running for 199 yards, over 200 total yards. I don't think they imagined that could happen, especially against a team like Buffalo. So this is like old school Ravens football where they just were more physical than the opponent. They wore him down. They beat him down with their workhorse running back. I didn't think, frankly, that Derrick Henry had any game like this left in him. I was clearly wrong. Now, they have to be smart about this. It's a marathon, and they want to make sure Henry's healthy for the postseason, which I would anticipate Baltimore would make despite the slow start. If you're the Bills, I mean, it's a smack in the face. It's reality. I would be very intrigued to see these two teams meet again in the playoffs. I think if the game were in Buffalo in January, maybe the outcome will be different. I'm still a believer in the Buffalo Bills, but boy, they got beat around. And, you know, Josh Allen didn't have the success, anywhere near the success that he had had in the first 3 weeks, you know, spreading it around to a million different players. James Cook, who had gotten off to a really hot start, he was a non-factor in this game. And they just really got beat up at the line of scrimmage. And the Ravens, despite having a shaky offensive line themselves for the first 3 weeks, they really controlled it. And Derrick Henry, you know, he did all the heavy lifting for Lamar Jackson and everybody else.
Yeah, the biggest thing about this that kind of opened my eyes really was how Baltimore responded the week after the Dallas game, where they were blowing the doors off of Dallas almost the very similar fashion, and then they let Dallas creep back up on them at the end there, where Dallas had a chance to potentially upset them the way that that game went down. But the Bills, I think they put the pedal to the metal, and they were like, you're not coming back in this one. So be fascinating to see how both those teams go going forward. For Burgess's sake, I know everybody out there listening, he's hoping the Bills are just going to lose every game from here on out, which I don't think is going to happen, much to his chagrin there. But let's go back to what you were talking about earlier. We want to jump on the news, the breaking news that was really the last few days now with Davante Adams. And I found it kind of fascinating, first and foremost, that he was like guest starring on Up and Adams, and then Obviously he's Davante Adams. I got a chuckle out of that every time, where I'm just like,
relation, right? Kay and Davante are not related.
Oh no, but that, I love watching Kay Adams. When she was on Good Morning Football, and in even her own show now, I love that show. So she is just one of the best personalities in football. But anyway, that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about Davante here, who clearly has ruffled some feathers with the Raiders organization, where I think I saw something where Antonio Pierce liked a post about Davante Adams playing his last game or last snap with the Raiders. And then all the speculations are coming out now where he wants to hook up with Aaron Rodgers in New York or possibly Derek Carr with New Orleans. Manish, talk to me. Where's Davante going? I need to know so I can put my picks in for DraftKings already.
Well, I think the team that needs him the most with realistic Super Bowl aspirations is a team that probably has very little chance of getting him, because they are the arch rival of the Oakland Raiders, and that's, or the Vegas Raiders, and that's Kansas City. You know, with Rashee Rice being out for an extended amount of time, we don't really have full clarity yet on whether he's out for the season, but I would anticipate that he's not really going to be a part of the equation of anytime soon. If you look at their wide receiver core, they need help, and you know, you're, that's not to even mention that Isaiah Pacheco is going to be out for another month and a half or so. So they're dealing with an old Kareem Hunt and an old Juju Smith-Schuster, Justin Watson. Who else do they have? They've got the rookie Xavier Worthy. I don't think he's ready to be the number one receiver. They've got an old Travis Kelce, who played really well last week after Rice went out. But how much can you realistically expect from Kelce week in and week out? A player like Davante Adams would be a dynamic addition for Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. I think that would be the best fit perfectly, you know, for the Chiefs. Now, I think for Davante Adams, the best fit would obviously be New York because of his connection with Aaron Rodgers. Not only his personal connection being like really close friends, but just the connection that they have on the field. And if you've watched any Jet games to this point, the one thing that stands out in the passing game is that Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson still have not fully connected. There's still a disconnect there, and it's probably because of a lack of experience playing games together. The results bear that out. Garrett Wilson, I don't even think Garrett Wilson's gotten 70 yards in any game this season. And he's not the dynamic weapon that a lot of people anticipated that he would be this season. That's not to say that he can't be, but at this point, there's clearly something missing in that on-field relationship. Whereas if you bring in Davante Adams, typically, you know, even if Davante were to go to Kansas City, you know, there's a learning curve there with Patrick Mahomes. As good as Patrick Mahomes is, as good as Davante Adams has been, there's still going to be a learning curve. Whereas if he goes to the Jets, or to a lesser degree, the Saints with Derek Carr, there is no learning curve. They know each other. This guy knows these quarterbacks in and out, especially Aaron Rodgers. They know their tendencies. They know you know, various adjustments that they can make on the fly, pre-snap. It's second nature to them. So I think that Davante Adams, if he were to go to New York, will fit in seamlessly. I mean, that's a guy who could be traded on a Tuesday, and that on that next Sunday, the first game with the New York Jets, he could get 10 targets and get 8 catches for 100 yards. I mean, that's how seamless it would be, because he knows Rodgers, He knows Nate Hackett. They all played together. We're part of the same group together in Green Bay. No learning curve whatsoever. There'll be somewhat of a learning curve if he went to the Saints. I don't think the Saints make sense, to be honest with you, not only from a financial perspective, but if you just look at the weapons that Derek Carr has, he's got Rashid Shaheed, he's got Chris Olave. I don't know where Devontae Adams would really fit in, especially when you consider you got to pay him about $13 million more for the rest of the season. I think he would like to play for Derek Carr because he's familiar with him. I just don't think the Saints would really be interested. The Jets would be extremely interested. It makes sense for them to go after him. Obviously, as I said, Kansas City makes sense. And as I said a few minutes ago, to me, a really intriguing option would be Washington because of all those reasons I outlined before. You've got a dynamic young quarterback. I think Devontae Adams would want to play for Jaden Daniels because of the promise that Daniels has shown thus far. And frankly, Devontae Adams is a smart guy. He knows the league landscape. He knows that the NFC East is wide open and that the Commanders could very easily make the postseason. But I think if, you know, if you were asking Devontae Adams, his preference would be Jets 1, Saints 2, Chiefs 3. And if you're looking at this logically, I think the Jets make the most sense because I think the Raiders would be more apt to trade him to the Jets than to their arch rival, Kansas City. The compensation ultimately is going to be fascinating because Adam Schefter reported that the Raiders are looking for a second-round pick and a player. I think that's best-case scenario. I don't see that happening. I think the most realistic scenario would be a conditional third-round pick that gets elevated to a second-round pick based on the new team's success, playing time, and or statistical benchmarks that Devontae Adams reaches for his new team. So theoretically, the Raiders could receive a second-round pick, but I think it would have to be on a conditional basis. I don't think a team would give up a second-round pick straight up in addition to a player or just even the pick itself straight up for Devontae Adams. He is rehabbing an injury, hamstring. I think he'll be fine, but he is 32 years old. You do have to restructure his contract beyond this season. A lot of factors at play. I think ultimately the best the Raiders can hope for is a conditional third-round pick and maybe a player, but from draft capital, conditional third, that could be a second, is probably where this thing winds up.
Yeah, that's one thing that I was looking at where obviously Devontae Adams is a generational talent at the wide receiver position, and I don't think any team out there would be like, no, we don't want him, obviously not. But it's very difficult to put up that kind of draft capital, like a first rounder, second rounder, when, like you said, he's on the wrong side of 30, where how much time does he realistically have left? And obviously, he's probably looking at it as, do I want the money aspect at this point, or do I want the ring possibility? And obviously, you know, the Saints would be an interesting choice, like you said, with all the talent that they already have there right now. Are they realistically going to be in a big push for a Super Bowl this year? They could be, because the NFC South is always a giant question mark, where you have Tampa being who they are, the Saints who they are, and Atlanta being who they are. The only one you don't have to worry about is the Panthers. But then again, on the AFC East side, you got the Jets vying with pretty much just Buffalo at this point, because spoiler alert, the Patriots stink, and Miami, what the heck happened to Miami? I mean, we could talk about that in a second, but let's move on, because obviously Devontae is Devontae, and he's going to go where he's going to go. We have no control over that. It's just going to be fascinating to sit here and speculate going forward. But I want to take a look at some week 5 matchups that are coming up. We kind of talked a little bit about the Jets Vikings, obviously going over to London and doing their thing over there. We're not going to talk about the Patriots and Dolphins, because that is just going to be a stink fest. Probably 3-0, or whoever doesn't want to score is going to win that game.
The over-under is 36.5, the lowest over-under in the of the slate this week.
I'd happily take the under in that spot right there. That's because I think combined you're going to be lucky to see 200 passing yards between both teams the way they're both playing at this point. But the one game that I really wanted to touch on that I'm interested to see, obviously a divisional foe for us Patriots fans, is the Bills taking on the Texans this weekend, which could be a really, really fun matchup where the Bills are going to Houston. Obviously, the Texans are coming off that last second gritty win against the Jacksonville Jaguars last week. The Bills got their doors blown off by Baltimore, but I'm interested to see where this could be a good playoff matchup, potentially, maybe even I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but maybe an AFC championship matchup. I don't know, but it's going to be really interesting to see the way they match up early on in the season, both being 3-1, both, you know, high aspirations for this year, where you have, obviously, it's a revenge game. Stephon Diggs is playing his old team there, where they kind of, I don't know if there was a bad blood or whatever. Obviously, everybody's trying to speculate, get it out of Josh Allen to be like, oh, you don't like Diggs, do you? And Allen's taking the high road, which you expect nothing less from him. Yeah. But I'm fascinated to see how this game is going to end up happening. But Manish, is there any games that catches your eye that's kind of be like a must-watch game for you?
Well, I do love that game. I think that game probably can't live up to the Seattle-Detroit game from Monday night, but I can see a shootout between those two teams. There's so many explosive players. Obviously, the quarterback position, the Texans are loaded at the skill position. I think, you know, they're not going to tell anybody or admit to this probably publicly, but I think they want to make sure that Stephon Diggs has a good game against his against his former team. They're not going to sacrifice the game plan, of course, but you know, he's good enough to still you know, make a difference. You know, this is actually a little trivia. This was the Texans hosting the Bills was actually Josh Allen's first playoff game of his career, and that was a game that the Bills were leading early. And I think, if memory serves, I think Josh Allen had a couple of fumbles or one key fumble that kind of blow an early lead. But and that was a game, I think, because it was in Houston, that was a game that the Bills were supposed to lose, but they played really well. So every time I think of Bills Texans, for some reason, I always go back to that game. But yeah, that's a fun game. You know, I do think, you know, I talked about it a minute ago, the London game, the Vikings undefeated, playing the Jets, coming off that disappointing loss. It is a Sam Darnold revenge game. I'm very curious to see how Aaron Rodgers reacts, you know, coming off that loss. Just kind of how he is physically, because this Vikings defense is no joke. And like as I said before, even though Jordan Love did a really nice job in the second half to bring the Packers back against Minnesota last week, by and large, this Viking defense has been extremely formidable. So, you know, can the Jets, you know, protect Aaron Rodgers enough? How banged up is he? You know, we're talking about a swollen knee midweek. That's probably something that he's dealt with at various points in his career, aches and pains. But at this age, how does his body respond? I think it's a fascinating game. I wouldn't rule out the Jets winning, but it's an intriguing game. It's a great way to start off the week. So, you know, a lot of good games, but, you know, even the Sunday night games, Steelers hosting Dallas is interesting, but yeah, I'm just really intrigued by it. The Vikings, are they actually for real? You know, I feel like we said this last week when they were 3-0. Now they're playing the Jets overseas. Can they go to 5-0? I mean, will Darnold stick it to the Jets? Will he revert to, you know, some of the issues that have plagued him in the past with turnovers, interceptions? Because he is facing a formidable pass defense. You say what you want about the Jets and stopping the run and issues they've had in stopping the run, but they are still one of the best defenses against the pass, and Sam Darnold has been exceptional throwing the football this year.
For sure. And actually, one thing that I forgot to highlight from this past weekend, or well, not weekend, it was Monday night, Jared Goff was perfect. Yeah. In that game, you brought up the Detroit-Seattle game. I was watching that actually, where I'm just sitting there and I'm like, at one point I'm sitting there going, I don't think Jared Goff has missed a pass in this game yet. And then lo and behold, he catches a touchdown pass too. So he really was perfect on the night. So that was a hell of a game. Did you catch that Monday night game? Sorry to go back. I want to talk about it.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. I know that in the other game on Monday night, Tennessee and Miami started about 45 minutes earlier. I didn't watch one second of that game. I watched every second.
You didn't need to watch it. It was terrible.
Yeah, the Seattle Denver Detroit game was so much fun. Yeah, I actually feel bad for Geno Smith. He played a great game. Mike McDonald's defense kind of let him down, but Jared Goff's in a great position. I was just talking to someone the other day about just how great of a fit it is for him and how great of a job Brad Holmes has done. The amount of talent that he has accumulated, not only on offense but on defense as well, through drafting has been unbelievable. And you know, I was talking to someone about the Rams Lions trade, this, you know, the Stafford Goff deal, and what they wanted, which is a Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford, but the odds are that they're never going to see another Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford, whereas this window is wide open for Detroit. Frankly, you know, they should have gone to the Super Bowl last year if not for a little bit of over aggressive decision making and a drop pass by Josh Reynolds. But I think that Jared Goff is by far playing the best football of his career. He played had an exceptional season last year. He's got so many weapons around him. The two running backs are Pro Bowl caliber. Each guy is a Pro Bowl caliber running back, Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. Sam Laporta hasn't even gotten rolling yet, and they're putting up these points. And you're seeing Jameson Williams really starting to blossom. This is the player that the Lions thought they were getting him when they drafted him in the top 10, top 12, whatever it was. I mean, he's an explosive, dynamic playmaker. I think after the game, Jared Goff said that Jameson Williams instills fear in defenses, and he's so right. You just watch that 70-yard catch and run the other night. I didn't even mention Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's their best overall wide receiver. They are just loaded everywhere. And their defense, even though they were not particularly good against Seattle, their defense is solid. It's such a dangerous team, and it's actually, I don't know Jared Goff. I've never spoken to Jared Goff. It's a great story because he was vilified by the end of his time in Los Angeles to the point where Sean McVay didn't even believe in him. He wanted Stafford. He wanted to get rid of Jared Goff. And now to see him go to a place that has been a historic loser and turn that franchise around, it's really a good story. He's really taken the high road. There have been many opportunities for him to, kind of clap back at people, and he's never done that. He's been a consummate professional. And again, I don't know him, never been around him, but just from what I see, he's a class act, and it's really good when guys like that, find success.
I just know that my favorite Jared Goff memory is the Super Bowl 53 against the Patriots, where he let the Patriots win, as far as I'm concerned. So I have, like you said, I have great admiration for Jared Goff. I appreciate the heck out of him. So couldn't agree more with you there. Like I said, just wanted to throw it back to Detroit because I wanted to mention that. It's just crazy to me that he finished with a perfect stat line there. But it's a perfect segue for Detroit because they have a bye week this week. So we don't have to talk about them playing in a game coming up. But the last game that I want to talk about on for week 5 slate before we get into our picks this week is the Saints Chiefs game on Monday night. I think that's going to be another doozy of a game, especially the big thing that I look at this game with is if the Saints had been able to pull off those last two games where they dropped them right at the end there against obviously the Eagles the way they did, and then Atlanta coming back and kicking the field goal there at the end. This could have easily been a 4-0 versus a 4-0 team or matchup with the Chiefs and Saints going into this, but especially where it's in Arrowhead, I'm kind of interested to see how it plays out, but I'm going to be fascinated to see how the Chiefs' defense matches up with all the playmakers that Derek Carr's been, finding with the Saints there. Like you said, Rashid Shaheed can beat you over the top. Chris Olave is no slouch there. You got to worry about Kamara every second that he's on the field there. So, and the Chiefs, where you, like you said, they're a little banged up right now, where they're kind of question marks at the running back position, whether it's Kareem Hunt, Carson Steele, and then you got Rice not being able to play, Xavier Worthy's the big guy, and if Kelsey's going to be able to continue the production he had last week, chalk me up for being very interested in this game. And spoiler alert, as long as you don't have it as one of your picks, this is going to be one of my picks for what we're about to talk about. So,
okay, well, look, full disclosure, it was going to be one of my picks, but I'll give it to you. That's fine,
Okay.
Being that I was 2-1 last week, but we'll talk about that in a minute. I agree with you. I think this is a fascinating game. The Chiefs, I mean, I hate saying this because it's not fair to the Chiefs, but they are really one of the worst 4-0 teams that I can remember. But they're 4-0, and that's all that matters, right? I mean, part of it's due to injury, but Patrick Mahomes has not played particularly well this season. And we just have to be honest about it. I mean, he's the best player in football for my money. No disrespect to anybody else who's a good player. He's the best player in football. However, he is not playing anywhere close to that this season. He's just not playing well for whatever reason. I'm sure there's a lot of reasons. So for that reason alone, I think the Saints have a real good chance. And since I'm not making the pick, I can divulge that I would take the Saints. They're getting 5 points. I think they can win the game. But from a betting perspective, I would absolutely take the Saints. I am not bullish on the Chiefs in the short term. I know it's a primetime game at Arrowhead that presents its own set of challenges. But as you said a minute ago, Hogan, the Saints dominated the Falcons. I have no idea how the Falcons won that game. They were dominating virtually every way, but somehow they won the game. Again, I'm not picking them because that's your terrain this week, but I think the Saints are going to win this football game.
Cool. I like it. And I like your optimism, because obviously I'm gonna echo a little bit of what you're saying there when we go over our picks. But before we get to our picks this week, we got to go back and unfortunately look at the results from this past weekend, where, like I said, last week I was the cocky, confident SOB that everybody loves to hate because I was 3-0. I was insufferable. I unfortunately did not go 3-0 this week. But first and foremost, we're going to start with you, Manish. You were 1-2 going into this this past weekend. You went with your surefire lock of the week there, Buccaneers +2 versus Eagles. Obviously, that worked out great for you there. Bengals -4 versus the Panthers. That worked out for you there. And then you took the Bills 2.5 versus the Ravens. How do you feel about that pick now?
I feel terrible. I think the way I framed it when we were speaking last week was, it makes no sense why the Bills are underdogs in this game. But now, in hindsight, I kind of know why they are underdogs, or why they were. So, yeah, I whiffed on that. That was a big-time whiff. I had no doubt the Bengals were going to bounce back, and they were in full desperation mode. So I had no doubt they were going to win. And frankly, I had no doubt that the Buccaneers were going to run right over the Eagles. The Eagles defense is laughably bad. And I have a lot of respect for Vic Fangio, but his bend but don't break defense has broken time and time again this season. They should have won the Falcons game a couple weeks earlier. Kirk Cousins carved them up in the last minute of the game. They're playing a very soft defense. They've got question marks at all three levels of their defense. They have no pass rush. So, I know that the Eagles were missing Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, Lane Johnson, all significant pieces of the offense, but that there's no excuse for the way the defense played. And Baker Mayfield was playing 7-on-7 football. If anybody watched that game, he wasn't getting any pressure, sitting back, picking them apart, and it went all game long. And, if you're an Eagles fan, they're on a bye this week. They get a chance to regroup, but I think you have to have significant questions, first and foremost, about this defense, and secondly, about how good or average, I should say, Jalen Hurts actually is. Because Jalen Hurts, to me, is the type of player who's getting paid like someone who needs to carry a team when they need to be carried. And he has not shown any ability to do that. I think he's more of a passenger than the guy riding the ship here. And he has just been turnover prone, careless in the pocket. Pocket awareness has been subpar. So those are two significant questions. If you're the Eagles moving forward, how does your defense bounce back? And is your quarterback the real deal? Because I think those are legit questions that should be asked of that team right now.
And I think the big thing that everybody needs to ask Nick Sirianni is, when the hell are you going to give the ball to Saquon? He's been their MVP for the first, the games that they lost, he's been their MVP, where he's doing incredible things with the football. He's barely getting any touches in the first half of the games there. I think it was one of the games against the Saints. I don't think he touched the ball once in the first quarter. And it's like, I'm not even an Eagles fan. I'm getting mad at him because I'm going, what the hell are you doing? You got one of the best running backs in the league and you're not feeding him the ball. Crazy. Sirianni, cut the crap, man. But let's before we crap all over the Eagles anymore, let's crap over somebody else, and that would be Burgess, who was 0-3 in the original week. Ooh. There, he was wearing the clown face there. So he went with his week 4 picks. The ding dong decided to go with the Patriots +10.5 versus the 49ers. For us Patriot fans out there, we know exactly how that turned out. He did not cover on that one, so that is a loss for Burge. However, his next two picks ended up working out pretty good for him, where he took the Titans +1 versus the Dolphins. The Titans easily destroyed the Dolphins on Monday night. And then very, very lucky with this one, he had the Saints +2.5 versus the Falcons. They lost by 2, so he got lucky there. I'm very upset about that one. That would have put him down in the same class as me.
It's better to be lucky than good, especially in gambling.
That's right. That's right. So we'll move on to the reigning champs picks, who did not do very good at all. Obviously, I was 3-0 after the first week. My picks, I took the Cardinals -3.5 versus the Commanders. Pretty sure they got blown out by like 30 points with the Jaden Daniels show there. And then my dumb butt took the Steelers -1.5 versus the Colts. This was, honestly, we talked about this. that was a huge upset as far as I'm concerned, because the Steelers are playing great ball. Colts, obviously, I just have to bet on the corpse of Joe Flacco. That's what I got to do going forward. And then, obviously, we talked about this matchup as well. The Vikings plus 2.5 versus the Packers. They almost blew it. They almost blew it at the end there. But thankfully, my Vikings took care of me. Let's move on to our picks this week. So obviously, you listeners out there will understand that Burgess is not here. I told the Ding Dong to get me some picks in so I could read them off for you guys. I did not get a chance to catch back up with Burgess before recording. But Manish, since you whooped my butt, you get to kick us off and you get to tell me what your picks are this week. And if you got a lock of the week, you know I'm going to throw the hashtag hitchhike at you. So let's hear it.
I don't know if I have a lock of the week. I'm confident in these picks, but not so much so that I'm going to make any kind of outlandish claim. I teased it earlier. Vikings, Jets, very intriguing game. Great way to start the week off. The Vikings are the favorite, 2.5. It's essentially a neutral field being out in London. I am a big believer, as you guys know, of Sam Darnold. I was a believer when he's with the Jets, so I'm certainly not going to get off the bandwagon when he's actually playing really well with the Vikings. I think, however, this game will be won by the Vikings' defense and their run game. I think that Sam Darnold will do just enough. I don't think you're going to see Darnold throw 3 touchdown passes. I think this will be an Aaron Jones game. I think this will be a defense game, getting after Aaron Rodgers. It's a 2.5-point spread. I think it's going to be a fourth quarter game. No blowout either way. But ultimately, I think when they get back on the plane to come back home, the Vikings are going to be 5-0. So I'm going with Minnesota to stay undefeated. Let me ask you, are you taking the Patriots? Because I feel like somebody should take a Patriot game out of the two of us.
I'm not touching them.
You're not? Okay, then I will do it. Against my better judgment. This was not a part of my original 3. But I feel like somebody should make a prediction on the Patriots game. No starting center, immobile quarterback who's gotten hit 40 times and sacked 15 times. But all that being said, also a running back, Ramondre Stevenson, who might now be benched for Antonio Gibson because of his fumble issues. So all of this turmoil naturally means that I am going to pick the Patriots to win. It's a 1-point game. I think the Patriots are getting one. Because it's in New England and because of everything I've read in the last several days about the Dolphins, because as I said, I did not watch that game on Monday night. The Dolphins are a completely broken team without Tua. Somebody I talked to in the league made a joke that said the MVP of the league really should be Tua, because you see how different that team is with and without him at quarterback. Tyler Huntley was awful. He neutralizes the weapons that they have with Devon Achane and Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. The Patriots defense is solid. They're playing in New England. The Patriots are going to win this game. I don't feel fully confident, but confident enough to make him one of my 3 picks. So take New England to beat the Dolphins. And my last
hope you're wrong. I do not want to see my Patriots win so that draft stock continues to rise. But I continue. I apologize.
All right. Well, okay. So I'm going to have to mix one of the 2 games that I was going to pick. I'm gonna take the Packers. They're a 3.5-point favorite. They're on the road against the Rams. Packer fans, cheeseheads travel so well. I mean, the only other teams that travel as well that I've seen are Eagles fans and Steelers fans. Steelers, Green Bay, Philly fans, incredible fans. They always travel. I think this could be a de facto home game for Green Bay, frankly. I think you're going to hear a lot of cheers when Jordan Love does well. Got his feet wet in his first game back. You know, made some mistakes, as you talked about, Hogan, earlier against Minnesota. But this is a banged-up Rams team that really can't do much of anything offensively. I think the Packers are going to win this game. Frankly, I think the Packers are going to win this game by a touchdown. So let me take the Packers minus 3.5 at LA.
I love it. I love all the picks except for the Patriots one. Clearly, I don't love that one.
Well, this is a Patriots focused podcast. One of us has got to make a pick on that game.
That's fair. Well, usually that's why we have Burgess here. So
yeah, true.
Get all excited about the Patriots for them to just smack them in the face by getting blown out by bad teams. So, speaking of teams getting blown out, I'm gonna go a little interesting here where I'm going to pick all underdogs this week.
Wow.
Because obviously the tail was between my legs after this past weekend going 1-2 compared to you guys with your vaunted 2-1 picks over here. I'm going to go with the Bengals in the upset. Over the Baltimore Ravens. I know we got to go by MGM. I'm on ESPN right now, but it says Baltimore -2.5, but I'll go Cincinnati for the upset there, +2.5 or whatever the number is. So I'll make sure to get those numbers afterwards. But yeah, I think the Bengals, I think they're going to get the juices flowing now, where obviously the comeback game against, well, not comeback, but the righting of the ship against Carolina last week, I think is going to kind of give Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins, those guys, a little bit more confidence. And I think the one thing that a lot of people forget is divisional games are always crazy at the end of the day, where Baltimore and Cincinnati don't like each other as it is. They're going to Cincinnati. I don't think the Cincinnati Bengals can afford to go 1-4 at this point, where the Ravens 2-2, you know, playing good ball right now. And obviously their defense has no reason to stop Derrick Henry or Lamar on the ground. That's why I got to pick the Bengals. It just makes no sense that I got to go with them. So I think they're going to pull off the upset there. That's my first pick here. My second pick is, I just lost it. Nope, I didn't lose it. Here we go. Another underdog that I did not take lightly last week, and they screwed me with my Pittsburgh pick. I'm going with the Colts over Jacksonville. So That one right there, I see Jacksonville -3 is what my screen's telling me. But give me the Colts +3 on that one. I think the Colts are going to find a way, whether it's Richardson playing or Flacco, the corpse of Joe Flacco, as I keep saying. I think they got something going on there with that running attack with Jonathan Taylor. He's too good to be bottled up. Jacksonville is just sputtering right now. They shouldn't be 0-4. They shouldn't go 0-5. That's why I got to go with the Colts, because like I said, I think the Colts are going to take it to Jacksonville and just knock them around. And Doug Peterson might be on his last legs down there. That's just my personal thoughts. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but you look like you got something to say, Manish. What's going on?
Well, two things. One is Doug Peterson came out this week and literally said he had not lost the locker room. So anytime a coach actually comes out and says that he hasn't lost the locker room, That's never good news. So whether he has or hasn't, the fact that he actually said those words is something that would be troubling if I were a Jags fan. The other thing is, I don't know if Jonathan Taylor's going to play. He's dealing with a high ankle sprain. I don't know if it's mild or not. So just factor that in. I don't know if you want to change your pick or you're going to stick with it. But I know that he's got some sort of high ankle sprain. The severity of it is unclear.
Well, I obviously don't have Jonathan Taylor in fantasy, so I did not know about that. But I'm still going to stick to my guns and stay with the Colts, because you know what? I'm crazy like that, because you got to take the underdogs for a reason. They got to make your day, whether they break your heart or you love them. So that's my second pick there. I'm sticking with the Colts, which is funny, because back in the day when Peyton Manning was a member of the Colts, you would have to brainwash me into cheering for the Colts back then. I hated the Colts so much. Now they don't bother me because none of them are there from those days. But, and then obviously the last one that I have on here that I was really excited about that we talked about earlier, I am agreeing with you. I'm taking the Saints +5.5 against Kansas City, because like I said, in a normal situation, the Chiefs, I realistically would see winning this game no problem, handily, with everybody healthy and whatnot. And, you know, the Zebras helping them out. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to jump on that bandwagon again. No. I see the Saints actually, you know, like I said, they've been in, they blew the doors off their first two opponents with the Panthers and the Cowboys the way that they did. And then obviously kind of fumbled a little bit against the Eagles, but still played them really tough where they had a chance to win that game. And then again, did what they did against Atlanta, made some hiccups. I think they're really going to become a team that it knows exactly what they need to do. And they're just going to go to Kansas City. And I don't think they're going to blow them out by any means, but they're either going to keep it extremely close or pull off the upset. I really like the Saints because they caught me by surprise this year. And I think they could be a really good team going forward. So yeah, lock it up there. All underdogs for me, for the underdog of the week, because like I said, still in first place. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I'm still
4-2 versus 3-3 and 2-4.
Hey,
you're clinging by it like a thumbnail.
I'm gonna take it where I can get it, Manish. Okay, that's just me. I'm gonna spout the positivity no matter what at this point. So
okay. I like two of your three picks. I'd be on board with the Colts pick if I knew that Taylor were fully healthy. Without Taylor and potentially just Flacco and Trey Sermon, I mean, the Jags are desperate. You say what you want about the Jags and the dysfunction. They are desperate as desperate comes. It's a home game. They're not going 0-17, so they're going to have to win a game at some point. So I don't know. I would take the Jags, but I love the Cincy pick. I love the Saints pick. If I didn't take the Pats, I would have actually taken the Broncos as 3-point favorites at home against the Raiders, who I do not like at all. I think they're completely inept.
Well, you know me. If the Titans were playing this week, if they weren't on a bye, I would have picked whoever's playing the Titans.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that's going to put a wrap on it for this week. Manish, it was great catching up with you, and I love talking the football as always. It's just, I can't wait to see what this week brings. It's been such an interesting year so far with teams. Like, who in their right mind would have Minnesota where they're at right now or have Jacksonville as bad as they are right now? It's just, this is why we love football, right? It's just crazy. But
yeah, it's like week to week. You never know. Even the Thursday night game is a great game. The Tampa at Atlanta, that'll be a fun one to watch.
That's it. That's exactly it. So at this point, guys, if you're still here, if you're still listening, we love and appreciate every single one of you. You can always find more of us on social media with the Tackles Pod. It's all over the place. We're always out there tweeting and doing our stuff. I still got to get the graphic out there for our updated picks. I'll make sure that will be uploaded after this episode drops. Stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for me, hopefully going 3-0 this weekend, unlike last weekend, so I can remain the champ going forward. So I don't give these guys any glory that they don't deserve. So thank you guys as always. We will catch you all next time. Later.